Hello, UConn Nation, and welcome to this edition of the UConn Proud Podcast with your hosts, John Malfatone and Jim Leahy. I am Jim Leahy, the Executive Director of UConn Proud, and I'm excited to bring you today's podcast. UConn Proud was born just a few years ago, founded by individuals who recognize the importance of UConn to the state's economy and culture. These podcasts are intended to give you a better look at the individuals who make UConn what it is today and why that is so important to Connecticut. To that end, we are lucky to have UConn's Director of Athletics, David Benedict, as our guest. There is no question that the Husky Athletics brand is an asset that is recognizable nationwide. David has been in charge of that brand for almost 5 years now, and I believe, after hearing today's podcast, you'll agree with me that it's in good hands. We are also quite fortunate that this podcast is brought to you by Connecticut Business Systems. UConn and CBS, a Xerox company, have partnered to create the UPrint program on the UConn campus, a program that is one of the first of its kind in the nation. Through UPrint, UConn and CBS are able to provide each department campus-wide with a document workflow program that ensures to produce the most cost-effective solution and an optimized fleet of machines that best suits the needs of all the students and staff. Again, we'd like to thank CBS for their support of today's podcast. Now, without further ado, here is our host, UConn Proud Board Chair, John Malfatone.
Thank you, Jim. Hello, UConn Nation. My name is John Malfatone. I am Chair of UConn Proud and your host for the next 45 minutes or so. Before we start, just a little background on me. I graduated from the University of Connecticut in 1977 with a BS degree from the School of Business. I bleed blue, as they say, and I've been active supporting our state university ever since graduation. Most recently, after serving a term on the UConn Foundation board and chairing the board, I've accepted the role as chair of UConn Proud. UConn Proud is the bridge between Connecticut state constituents and UConn. We exist to provide constituents unbiased, objective information on what is happening at our flagship university. We hope that this mission will help promote and support UConn, especially when it comes to matters at the state legislature. I am joined here today by a UConn athletic director, David Benedict, and the UConn Proud executive director, Jim Leahy, who is my technical support lifeline for this podcast. Jim, are we good to go?
We're all set.
Great. Let's not waste any time. Let's get right into it. And as I mentioned, we're lucky enough to have UConn's director of athletics, David Benedict, as our guest today. David joined the Huskies in March of 2016 and has had a dynamic impact on Husky athletics. Hard to believe it's been 5 years. He's been impactful in the classroom, on the courts, the playing fields, and in the boardroom. There's been quite a bit going on at UConn athletics, if you haven't noticed, since Dave has arrived. Continued athletic achievement, very strong academic performance, the return to the Big East, several Big East championships, an amazing independent football schedule, and incredible facilities development with even more to come in terms of a new hockey rink, just to name a few of David's accomplishments. Welcome, David.
Hey, it's good to be here, John. Look forward to the conversation and reaching out to our fans.
Great. David, for folks who aren't familiar with you, describe your professional journey to the University of Connecticut.
Well, it's, you know, I think I've been on this athletic journey my entire life. I was, I guess fortunate, in my opinion, to grow up in a household where my father was a coach. He was a football coach. So I've been around athletics my entire life, and I appreciate what sport and college athletics can do for people. I think it's transformational. We could talk more about the opportunity that I believe occurs for individuals with college athletics versus I think some people believe that we're taking advantage of these kids. And I certainly think that there's more that we can do and more opportunity we can provide our student athletes. But at the same time, I would hate to ever see college athletics go away, because I think there's a lot of people that would not have the impact and transformation that we see on a day-to-day basis. And so, look, I grew up around a football field, in a locker room, and coaches' meetings. And I've been fortunate enough to be able to follow that passion in my career. I was fortunate enough to play college football and then go on and get my graduate degree and start my career back home at Arizona State. And early on in my career, I was lucky. It certainly wasn't by design, but I was lucky to start my career at a time when there was individuals that really have become significant leaders in college athletics, like Kevin White, who just announced his retirement at Duke, and Gene Smith, who's at the Ohio State University and has been there for quite a while. In addition to Jim Phillips, who's now the commissioner at the ACC, and a whole host of other individuals that have gone on to be athletic directors. So at an early time in my career, I was very fortunate to be able to watch and listen and learn from people that have had a significant impact. And, you know, there's a lot of different ways to follow your career. I wound up moving around a lot. This is my sixth stop. So Arizona State to Long Beach State, Long Beach State to Virginia Commonwealth, Virginia Commonwealth to the University of Minnesota, University of Minnesota to Auburn, and now I find myself 5 years down the road here at UConn. And this is the longest I've been anywhere since my first job at Arizona State. I was there for 10 years. And then I kind of found myself bouncing around every 2 to 3 years between schools. So, you know, we feel very good to have some roots down and to have been in one spot for this long. And just very fortunate to be part of Husky Nation and the University of Connecticut.
So David, when you got the call from the recruiter and they said, we have a job for you at the University of Connecticut, what was your initial reaction?
Well, you know, it was interesting because I had just interviewed for another job not long prior to that call. And so, you know, I've always been very cognizant of my job that I was doing. You know, I don't like being constantly on the look for other jobs. And I've always been a big believer that if you do a great job with where you're at, then opportunity will find you. And so I was very, determined to find out if I was really going to be a good fit for the job, because I didn't want to go on another interview. And as just part of building a quality pool, per se, versus really understanding if I was a good fit based on my experience and skill set. And most of these jobs, I think there's a difference. And I think early in my career, you feel like, oh, hey, that's a good job. I'm a good candidate for it. And that's really not the way it works. Every place is unique and different, and and at different times, people need different things from leaders. And so it's very important to ask the questions to really determine if I was going to be the right person at that time. And we had that conversation. Obviously, UConn has an unbelievable brand, so I was excited about the call. But I was more interested in trying to figure out if I was really going to be a good fit. And fortunately, I think getting the answers to those questions, I determined that I think that my skill set did fit it. And then it was just a matter of going through the interview process to see if the people that really know UConn at the time felt like I was the right fit.
Well, David, for what it's worth, I think it was hand in glove. You're perfect, perfect fit. So we're so happy to have you. So you did just pass your fifth anniversary. As you reflect back, what do you think are some of your greatest accomplishments?
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of things that you can think about, but I think navigating the conference situation was and will turn out to be something that I think is going to have a long lasting impact on UConn. It wasn't long after I got here that it was very obvious that our fan base and other people were not necessarily in love with our situation in the American, and that's nothing to take away from the American Athletic Conference. It's a very good conference. There's very good schools in that conference. But just like we were talking about whether or not I was a good fit for this job, you know, I don't think we were a good fit for that conference, just from a geographical standpoint, from a priority standpoint. And so I found myself a lot of times in the room being the only one that was really fighting for basketball. And, you know, that obviously is very important to us. Not that other things aren't either, but you want to be in a conference where you really feel like there's a good fit and everyone is on the same page about what the priorities are. So I really think the conference piece, going to the Big East, finally feeling like we've got our feet well planted and everyone's not talking about, well, when are we going to get to the ACC? When are we going to get to the Big Ten? When are we going to leave this conference? And so I feel an energy about our fan base, even though we went through this COVID year that I haven't felt since I've been here. And that's exciting to me. It was really unfortunate that this first year in the Big East that we didn't get to enjoy the championships and the competition and the renewal of rivalries with some of our old Big East foes with our fans. But it's just going to make it that much sweeter here as we turn the page and look towards August. Mm.
So getting into the conference couldn't be easy. As you say, the AAC it was a good conference especially for basketball and football. And so just give us sort of an inside baseball look on how you accomplished this. What were conversations like internally with at the university, maybe with the board of trustees, and how did you first approach the Big East execs, and how did that all transpire?
Yeah, well, I'm sure there's things that people that were involved in the process would want to remain confidential. So I'll do my best to give as much detail as I can without getting anyone upset with us. Mm-hmm. Although we're in the league now, so I'm not sure they'd kick us out if I say something. But look, the thing that became really clear to me, and you hear it in conversations, you hear people say things, you know, getting into a conference is not that easy from the standpoint. And, you know, everyone talks about, well, we should be in the ACC. We should have got in over Louisville, and this person should have done that, or that person was responsible for us not getting in. You know, that decision is made by a group of athletic directors and presidents. And, you know, the majority of the time, it's the presidents that have the final vote on something like that, because that's a transformational decision for a conference. And so every individual and every institution has different priorities. And so to say that, you know, just because we have a great brand doesn't mean that that's what's important to a particular president at a particular school. And so it's a challenge. And you have to, it's not enough just to say, well, hey, we want to be in your conference. And oh, by the way, we've won a bunch of national championships in a lot of sports. That's not enough. You know, you just don't know what's going to impact one particular member institution over another. And so, you know, alignment's very important. And obviously, having been in the Big East previously, we know that there was an alignment there. There was a big concern about us relative to football. Well, what are we going to do with football? And because we have football, does that mean we're always going to be looking for what the next option is down the road? And so when we were having conversations, football was always a part of those conversations, because I think obviously the Big East is focused and the priority is basketball. And I don't foresee that ever changing at this point in time. And so, you know, that was certainly something that they wanted to feel extremely confident about, that if they were going to bring UConn back and provide us that opportunity, that we weren't going to be immediately looking for something else, you know, so that we could be in a conference that had football as well. So, you know, we worked through any of those types of issues. And, you know, ultimately, I'm not sure what all the conversations were on the conference side, especially with some of the newer schools and newer members with the Big East. But certainly, I think we had the support of the previous Big East schools on the East Coast. I think they all understood the value that UConn would bring to the Big East, especially as you talk about basketball and the Big East tournament, which is such a significant piece for the conference, how our fan base had supported that event and how much of an impact UConn had on that event and how much success we had there. So, you know, all those things were aligned, but again, you've created a dynamic in the league where you have an odd number, even though it allows us to play a 20 game schedule that everyone plays each other twice, which is nice. It's created a imbalance geographically where there's six teams on the East Coast and five teams kind of in the Midwest. And so that could potentially create voting imbalances. So you have all these different types of pros and cons. And fortunately for us, when we worked through all of that, we came to a place where we both mutually agreed that it would be in everyone's best interest that UConn come back to the Big East.
I'm curious, does the Big East view UConn as important to the New York market, you know, given the eyeballs in New York and the importance of recruiting in that area?
I certainly would think so. You know, there was obviously a demonstration of that when we were in the conference before. So I don't know that we had to spend a lot of time selling them on that fact. Mm-hmm. The proof really, John, is in the numbers and the data. And so, you know, the TV numbers were significantly better than they have, especially on the women's side. I will tell you, you know, and this is one of the things that someone told me as we were exiting, that, you know, they understood why we made the decision, but, you know, they wanted to be clear that while the Big East, they understood the value basketball-wise, but we'll never get the ratings and eyeballs on TV that we did in the American, which, you know, I was kind of surprised. But, you know, if you think about it, you know, we went from a school or a conference that had lots of big public schools, big alumni bases. You're on ESPN, where you're going to the Big East, which has smaller schools, private schools, not as large of alumni bases. So, you know, I didn't respond to it. I just listened. But I'm happy to say that this is the first year that Fox Sports in the sport of men's college basketball has actually outdrawn ESPN. Hmm. The numbers were better for the first time ever on Fox Sports for college men's basketball than they were on ESPN and the family of networks, which is pretty significant. And the comment was to me is you'll never get the same type of numbers that you will in this conference. And, you know, I don't have a comparison necessarily to the Big East numbers versus the American numbers. It's not really important at this point in time. But the bottom line is we got great ratings and they're only going to get better. And I think it was a good move on our part.
Right. So let's segue to football and your point that people view that as a risk. You took the risk out of being an independent football school by putting together a schedule that's unbelievable. I mean, it goes out several years. I think it's 2025 or even beyond. So maybe spend some time talking about how difficult that was to do.
Well, I think the challenge, John, is that, you know, there's a lot of things that you were juggling at the time of having, you know, all of these very private conversations with all the different players, whether it was the conference representatives, some of the athletic directors from the Big East, certainly internally on our campus with board members and the president and other donors and coaches. But, you know, you're doing all of that, but you can't really go out and start asking questions about putting together an independent football schedule because the cat would kind of be out of the bag, so to speak. And so there was probably only one person that I relied on, and I've talked about him a little bit before, but David Brown, that used to work at ESPN, who's really the single most involved individual in the country when it comes to college football scheduling. Yeah. We had lots of conversations. The nice thing about Dave Brown is that, you know, he understands UConn because he lived in Bristol for a long time. So I wasn't talking to someone that really didn't appreciate or have an understanding of what our program had been in the Big East, the success that we'd had, the value of being, you know, sandwiched between New York and Boston, and what our facilities are. So, you know, he gave me a great perspective and a baseline for what we thought we might be able to accomplish if we did this. But there was definitely risk. And the day of the announcement, without question, you know, a lot of the media were probably more interested in, well, what are we going to do with football now versus talking about the Big East and all of the benefits of moving to the conference. And that kind of, you know, got the hair on my neck standing up a little bit, because while I appreciated the questions, I wasn't in a place at the time to really be able to have moved forward and done that work. And that was the risk. And we believed that we were going to be successful in putting an appropriate schedule together, one that was going to help us from a recruiting standpoint, one that was going to help us competitively, and one that was going to help us with our fan base. And as you mentioned, we're pretty close to being done from 2021 to 26. Mm-hmm. And I while certainly there's some games here or there where people might say, well, why are you playing that one versus another one? And part of that was just being able to get the first few years in the books. But I think as we look, we've got 21 Power Five games on our schedule over the next 5 years, and 10 of those are at home. We've got, you know, we really wanted to focus on the Northeast region. And so we've got home and homes with Maryland, Pitt, Boston College, Syracuse. You know, there's really only one Power Five in our region that, you know, for some reason they just can't seem to get with the program here and do a home and home with us. But, you know, we've really been successful in that area. We've got a whole host of ACC teams with Duke and North Carolina and NC State, Wake Forest we just announced. So, you know, I couldn't be happier with how things have gone from a scheduling standpoint. In talking to Coach Edsel, I think while he certainly had a lot of concerns early on, I think the scheduling piece has really been helpful. And I think it actually provides us a strategic differential when he's out recruiting, because we would never have been able to put these kind of schedules together and have the flexibility to schedule like we had if we were a part of a conference. And so recruiting has gone very well since we made this announcement. And obviously the schedule had a major impact, and as well as our ability to get a national television deal. And that was too, based on the fact that we put together a really good schedule. You know, the TV people that we spoke to, I think were pretty surprised when they looked at the schedule that we were able to put together in a short period of time. And it was very attractive to them. So look, I think those are two of the most important components from a recruiting standpoint, is who are you going to play and how are you going to be broadcasted? So we've been very successful on those two fronts.
Now, are those commitments firm, or do schools have the ability to cancel those games?
Well, John, you know this, having been in business for a long time. I mean, every contract is meant to be broken in some way. But yeah, the games that I'm referring to are all contracted. It doesn't mean that, you know, sometimes games get pushed, they get canceled for one reason or another. Obviously, all but one of the games that we had scheduled last year during COVID, which we didn't play this past season, there's only one game that we actually rescheduled from last year's 12 games. So, you know, you just scheduling is not an exact science. And look, we're in a position where it's important for us to try to be flexible as we schedule. And what I mean by that is if somebody calls us and says, hey, Dave, is there any possible way to shift this game to another year? And as long as it makes sense for us and them, we're going to do everything we can, because we need partners. We need people to want to work with us and schedule us, in the future as well. So we're going to do everything we can. And the same is true for football, for TV. You know, if CBS Network comes to us and says, hey, you know, we'd like to do this. We'd like to consider moving this game to a Friday night. You know, you'd be one of the only games on TV that night. We're gonna do what we can to accommodate them, because we need the support of our TV partners, and we certainly want to have a good reputation as it relates to scheduling, so that the first 5 years are not the best 5 years. We want to make our schedule moving out even better than what the first five are.
Is not this year the year that we play Clemson?
We have Clemson. We have Purdue at home. You know, we're going to schedule Army as much as we possibly can. We're going to play UMass every year. We're going to play Temple. We've got a home and home with Temple on the books. You know, again, we're going to play as many Northeastern schools as we possibly can. And then we're going to play in places where it makes sense for us from a recruiting standpoint. And then, you know, we'll look at different opportunities as it relates to competitiveness and or just trying to fill out the schedule at the end of the day. And there are some unique challenges. Trying to get games during the month of November can be challenging, but that's where having two independents that are basically in our backyard with UMass and Army, that really can be helpful for all of us because it allows us to help each other. And have flexibility as we're building our schedule. So, when we play what's referred to as a guarantee game, which is a Clemson opportunity, they're never going to travel. A program like that at this point in time is not going to travel to play us at home. And so if we're going to do a guarantee game, obviously the money is important, but we also want to do it with a program that's going to be on the biggest stage possible to give our student athletes the experience. And although it's going to be tough and those games are very challenging from a competitiveness standpoint, you're getting to go to places that are marquee, that are going to have 80 to 100,000 fans and are going to be an opportunity for our kids to really test themselves on the biggest stage possible. So, you know, we have Michigan, we have Ohio State, we have Tennessee. Those are the kind of marquee games that we're going to do in the future if we're doing guarantee games.
Yeah, there'll be fun travel events as well. But no, kudos to you, David, for putting together that schedule. When I look at it, it seems balanced. There's some challenging games, as you say.
Yeah, we lost the Ole Miss game last year, but now we've got a home and home with them. Yeah. So we're gonna get our fans to the Grove after all. Which is, you know, again, that's an amazing experience. And, you know, we appreciate those guys working with us and helping us get that done.
Yep. And the good news for listeners is that season tickets are being sold now and tailgating will be allowed. So welcome to post-COVID sports. Speaking of COVID, David, give us an idea of what it was like for athletes to train and play during the pandemic. It seems like it must have been awfully hard.
Yeah, it was. And it was, you know, I didn't really enjoy this past year much because you're kind of the principal all the time, you know, and it's like everyone's getting called to the principal's office all the time. And, you know, it was something I had to do. You know, I had to be the bad cop a lot, whether it was with coaches or student athletes, which is not enjoyable. But the reality is we had a set of circumstances. We had a whole host of protocols and procedures that we had to follow. And if people didn't follow them, unfortunately, there were consequences that were really out of our control. And so we did the best we possibly could to make sure everyone understood. You know, fortunately, and knock on wood, we did not have a serious medical issue because of COVID. But we certainly had a lot of starts and stops and quarantines and certainly had our share of individuals that got COVID. But it was just part of it. And I think the first semester after we got everyone there and we started having student athletes get COVID, you know, there was a better appreciation for how it worked. And student athletes had the choice. You know, they were going to follow the protocols and Dr. Cassiero's recommendations, or they weren't, and they were basically taking the risk of getting it. And many of our kids did. And, you know, it was challenging, but the isolation, of COVID, I think probably, was the biggest challenge of all, because it's just not natural for individuals, especially young people on a college campus, to be stuck in their room all the time. You know, wearing a mask, while maybe that's inconvenient, and certainly it's difficult when you're running or trying to exercise and compete at a high level, you know, being isolated all the time and having to be told that you got to stay in your room, you know, pretty much all the time, unless you're doing X, Y, and Z, just very, very difficult for our young people. And I'm glad that we're moving past this. And it's going to be important that obviously we get as many of our student athletes and staff vaccinated as possible. I think that's really, really important to the overall success, because while I appreciate some people don't want to get the vaccine, you don't have to compete in sports. And unfortunately, one person can really create a lot of problems if they get the disease, if we don't have a lot of people that are vaccinated. Obviously, there's always going to be exceptions, and I'm sure the university will take those into consideration. But the more people are vaccinated, the more normal our experience will be for our student athletes and our fans next year.
Yeah, I think the fact that we got through the basketball season and there was an NCAA tournament is just tremendous. I mean, what a challenge that had to be for the athletes, for the coaches, for the referees. There was one game that bothered me, and let me know if you can speak about it. It was because we were shut down for 14 days because a referee had tested positive for COVID. This was the men's team, but still had refereed that night. It was a bunch of, I don't know, bad information, but it seemed like there was some misinformation that was on the line about that. But can you tell us exactly what happened there?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to try to recollect, because there were a lot of things that happened this past year that I've tried to like delete from my memory bank. Yeah. The best I can recollect on that one is, and John, I mean, certainly our listeners can appreciate this because they went through it too. You know, the protocols and the recommendations for COVID and what you're supposed to do, you know, they changed a lot throughout the year. And obviously, as we learned more and there was more data, we were informed by that and were able to make better decisions. And in some case, things became a little bit looser based on learning. But in this situation, what had occurred is there was not a mask requirement at the time for our officials. And, you know, the officials are traveling around. They were officiating in multiple leagues, multiple games a week, and they were testing and throughout the week, and those tests would be dropped in the mail and sent to a lab. And I think in this situation, it was one of those things where, for whatever reason, this individual's test had not been provided prior to the game, and the individual, you know, officiated the game, and we found out shortly after that he was positive. And so then, you know, the protocols and procedures basically took over at that point in time. And at that point in time, because he was unmasked and engaged with our student athletes, we had to go through the quarantine. And again, I'm pretty sure, if I remember correctly, in that shutdown, we didn't have anyone that became positive because of that. And so that's really where the struggle was, is, you know, okay, you just shut your team down for 2 weeks and no one got positive. And so that's frustrating, because you just lost 2 weeks. Then when you start back playing, you know, you haven't played anyone for 2 weeks. So it takes another week to get back into game mode. And so really it's like a 3 week impact, you know, and that's if you didn't have anyone get sick. So yeah, lots of challenges. We did modify our procedures after that. I think the league, because of that, wound up requiring all the officials, unless there was a medical reason, to mask up. during the games. And then we started testing more, more often. So we weren't in that position to not have a test result. And there was a situation that came on later in the year where we wound up having an official for that same thing happened. For whatever reason, you know, maybe the mail was slow or the lab was retesting a test because they got an inconclusive and we didn't have a test result. So we wound up testing them on our campus to confirm that they were negative at the time. So look, it was a learning process for everybody. Certainly we were trying to be as exact as we possibly could, not to have those shutdowns when they weren't really necessary or they could have been prevented. But, you know, so much of this was obviously new to everybody. But I really think whether it was our league or our student athletes, coaches, everyone really tried to do their best.
Well, enough on COVID. I think we're all hoping we're past the pandemic. And as you say, we'd like to forget what transpired over the last year and a half. So let's talk about the new athletic facilities on Calhoun Way and maybe take us from what was your dream to reality and how the whole project transpired.
Well, I think we were talking a little bit about this before we started. And, you know, when I got to UConn, it wasn't really my dream. You know, there were individuals that had been dreaming about this for a lot longer than I was. You know, Coach Penders and Doug Elliott, who's a former player, they'd been working together for over 15 years on a vision for a new facility for baseball. And certainly Tony Rizza and men's soccer had been talking about getting a new facility done. And, you know, now we're starting hockey. That was a part of the commitment that the university made when we joined Hockey East. So these things were really already being talked about and discussed. And in some cases, there were already some renderings and visions for what they could be. But, you know, when I got there, we certainly dug into that. I was very surprised, actually, when I made my first campus visit that some facilities were, better or more than what I expected, and others were less than what you would expect at a place like UConn. And so, you know, very, very happy that we're sitting here today, still not talking about the dream or the vision, that we've got a new soccer lacrosse stadium. We have a new baseball ballpark, Elliott Ballpark. We've got a new softball facility, and we have a new performance center that supports those five sports. And then we have a project that is literally under construction as we speak with the new ice hockey arena. And they are quickly clearing ground back there on Calhoun Way. So it's exciting, you know, when you're building things, it is a long process on a campus to go from, you know, vision to actually opening the doors. But we're very far along the way here. And, you know, 18 months is the projected build time on ice hockey. It'll go fast. I mean, it sounds like a long time, but it'll go pretty quick. But it's really exciting. I know the student athletes, the coaches are really excited. And look, you always feel bad for the student athletes who especially are still here that aren't going to actually get to be able to take advantage of the new facilities. But I can tell you that most of them are really proud to know that they were a part of it. And certainly they're proud because they know the impact that it's going to have on the programs that they participated in. And so, look, I don't think that there's any question that these facilities are going to help us in our desire to be competitive and win conference championships and be nationally competitive. We're already seeing that in certain sports relative to competition and recruiting. But facilities don't win games. I mean, they don't help you win a game. They help you recruit. And that's a massive part of being competitive, but they don't win games. So I don't want anyone to misconstrue that, hey, just because we have new facilities means that we're going to win conference championships in every sport. But at the same time, it is a significant part of college athletics these days. And whether you agree with that or not, it's an investment in certainly in the facilities that we've committed to. It was a necessary investment because it was going to be hard to maintain the success. People talk about soccer right now, and our soccer programs are not achieving at the level that we have historically and at the level that we want them to. But, you know, we achieved in soccer a long time ago at a really high level and never made the investments. And now you have a lot of other programs around the country that have made significant investments in facilities, and we fell behind. And so we've certainly caught up on the facility standpoint. And now we expect in short order to be competing and catch up on the competition standpoint.
Well, I had the opportunity to tour the facilities. I actually was on the baseball field and got to hit a few balls. Just fantastic. The right field hill reminds me of the old hill overlooking Memorial Field. It's going to be wound up being a great spot to watch baseball games. So, folks, if you haven't, take a trip up and get down on Calhoun Way and take a look at some of our new facilities.
No, I think, John, you're right, and I think when our fans come out, they're really gonna enjoy the facilities. I think it was hard to really push to tell people they need to be coming out to those events because we didn't even have running bath. We had no bathrooms. Everything was portalettes, and we had no real concessions. So it was a struggle. Now we're in a totally different situation, and I think we're going to be able to provide a great experience for our student athletes, but also our fans. And so we want to see those venues full when we're competing on campus. But you know, having been to the campus at Notre Dame for the regional, the baseball regional, you know, you really don't necessarily think about this when you're building your facility. Now that it's completed, you know, we are really excited about how nice it is. But, you know, we have a nicer facility, in my opinion, than Notre Dame does in baseball. And that's the level of what we built. And that goes for soccer and softball. We built really beautiful facilities that are perfectly situated for our programs. And no one is going to be brought on our campus anymore and be toured around it, specifically in those sports, and think that we're not committed to those programs. Where previously, I think you could have some people that would have come on campus and that they would have been doing one of these, like looking around like, hey, you really want me to come here? You guys are really committed. That day is over. And it's going to be fun to see how this unfolds over the next several years.
Well, Jim Penders has done a stupendous job of recruiting baseball athletes without a facility like that. So one can only wonder what he's going to do in the future. One final topic, since I'm sure everybody's interested in basketball. So let's talk a little bit about men's and women's basketball this season. What are some of the more interesting and exciting non-conference games we can expect?
Well, we just, you know, on the women's side, you know, Gino always wants to schedule the absolute best that you can. And so we were fortunate. We just finished a home and home with Tennessee. And as everyone knows, that series had not been played for quite some time for various reasons. And we got the two games in, and we just signed another two game series with Tennessee. So you have Tennessee. We were supposed to play Texas. The coach from Mississippi State is now at Texas. He just completed his first year. I think that game is getting pushed back. So actually Tennessee, I think, plugged that hole. I think we go to Oregon. You know, we're playing Notre Dame. I mean, you're always going to play the best of the best there. It'll be interesting. We always played Baylor, you know, interesting to see how Baylor's program does here since Coach Mulkey left to go to LSU. I'm sure she'll want to play us at LSU. you know, over time. But, you know, that schedule is difficult to get on because we've got 20 conference games now. And, you know, because we play home and homes with all these good programs, it takes you off campus and things fill up pretty quickly. On the men's side, you know, we're still in the process of rebuilding our program. You got 20 very challenging, difficult conference games. The men and the women, for the first time ever, I believe, are both playing in the same MTE. So anyone that's not aware of that, it's a great opportunity. I've never been to Atlantis. It seems like every time I'm supposed to go to Atlantis, I leave a campus. And I've missed it. So I'm really looking forward to going to Atlantis this year. But it's even better because our women are playing on the front end of the week and then the men are playing on the back end of the week. So it's going to be really fun to be able to see both of our programs. And one of the other things that'll be fun, particularly for me, is there's great fields of other teams. And I believe four of the other five institutions I've worked at are all going to be represented there. So Auburn's going to be there, VCU is going to be there, Arizona State's going to be there, and University of Minnesota on the women's side. So it'll be somewhat of a reunion for me, at Atlantis. But you know, you don't know. I don't believe they've set the games yet as to who you're playing. But that's a tremendous field of teams, especially on the men's side. And so we're going to get three really competitive games in there. And so now you've got 23 games. I think people probably are aware recently it was announced that we're going to be part of the Big East Big 12 Challenge. And we're going to be playing West Virginia, which will be fun because it's a renewal of a game that we used to play on a regular basis. And obviously Coach Huggins there is a legend. And he always puts together very competitive, very physical, demanding team. So it's, you know, going on the road to West Virginia. I've never been to that campus. I'm sure it's going to be a difficult place to play against a really tough, physical, competitive team. So, you know, that gets you to 24 games. We're working on, I believe, playing in Never Forget, which is down in Prudential. And so I'm sure we're going to have a top rated opponent for that. And by that time you're at 25 games and you need some games, especially when you have a younger team and you're bringing some new individuals in that are going to be part of your games in the future. And an important part to have some games where you can go out and not necessarily be matched up with opponents that you got to play at your best to win. And so they'll schedule some games that will be competitive and challenging in different ways, but will also give us the chance to get individuals on the court and get them experience before we start to really hit the gauntlet.
Great. I think we're just about out of time, David. I could sit here and talk UConn sports with you forever. So I'd like to thank you for taking the time to do this and meet with us today. And go Huskies.
John, hey, thank you very much. It's great visiting with you. And you know, look, UConn athletics, so important to the state of Connecticut. We see it all the time. We feel it from all corners and ends of the state. And certainly as you guys look to support the university through your efforts, just want to shout out and thank what you do, as well as everyone around the country and within the state of Connecticut.
Well, thanks, David, for being our guest on today's broadcast. And as always, thank you, John, for hosting. We also would like to once again thank Connecticut Business Systems for its support of today's podcast. To our listeners out there, we'll save our biggest thanks for you. For more information on UConn Proud, please visit us online at www.uconproud.org. That's it for now. Go Huskies!